It's Tuesday, the 22nd of October, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, Canada heads to the polls.
Justin Trudeau, it appears, has secured a second term in office, although he will be the leader of a minority government.
Also ahead, a new era arrives in Japan as the nation marks the enthronement of Emperor Naruhito. Department store Nordstrom defies retail trends by unveiling a bold new flagship in New York. And as chaos continues in Westminster, our affairs editor Chris Chermak performs a health check on the art of protesting. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Canadians voted yesterday in what looked to be a tight election. Monocle's Toronto Bureau Chief Thomas Lewis has been following the results.
Well, the opinion polls leading into Election Day yesterday suggested that it would be a knife-edge result. But what we have, it appears so far, a much clearer victory for Justin Trudeau and his Liberal Party than many here had predicted. That marks, of course, a victory for Trudeau on many levels, but also a really thumping defeat, both in terms of the imagination that his opponents try to conjure for both Andrew Scheer, the head of the Conservative Party here in Canada, and Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the New Democratic Party on the left of the political spectrum. It has been a night of surprises, however, too. The Bloc Québécois, that storied political force in Quebec, which had seen its fortunes drop pretty substantially since the days of the two referendums on whether Quebec should separate from Canada, the first in the 1980s, the second in the 1990s. The resurgence of the Bloc Québécois is really going to be a result, I think, that will be picked over for some time, given that it appears they will be now the third largest party on Parliament Hill in Ottawa. It's also been a good night for the Green Party. They started off this election campaign with one MP and they have finished it with three, and they have made gains in the Maritimes on Canada's eastern coast, as well as maintaining other seats in Western Canada too. I think for Justin Trudeau, his mandate obviously chimed much more clearly than that of his opponents. I think the soul searching for both the Progressive Conservative Party and the New Democrats here in Canada really begins now. I think for the Conservatives, what they struggled with is this emerging brand of populism that has popped up in Ontario. Doug Ford, the populist premier of Ontario, is one of the least popular provincial governments in the country, despite winning by a landslide last year. And also in Alberta, which has gone pretty decisively to the Conservatives, the split there between Alberta, which is historically the major producer of Canada's gas and oil sectors, the division there between it and the rest of the country is far more pronounced now than it was leading in to this election yesterday. So Justin Trudeau, it seems, will be Prime Minister here in Canada for another 4 years. He will do so most likely as the leader of a minority government. There were many across the country, many voters I spoke to, who said that this would be their dream outcome, in fact, given that minority governments are not a rarity by any means in the history of Canadian politics at a national level, but that actually they force the minority government to speak to one's opponents. And given that there seems to be a feeling of increasing division in many parts of the country, speaking and trying at some kind of political reconciliation in the 4 years to come will be no bad thing.
To Japan now, where a ceremony for Emperor Naruhito is ushering in a new era.
Today is a public holiday in Japan to mark the enthronement of Emperor Naruhito. Although the planned open-top parade has been rescheduled for the 10th of November, following Typhoon Hagibis, the formal ceremony goes ahead with 400 foreign VIPs, including Prince Charles, German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier, and Myanmar State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi. Also expected are nearly 1,600 representatives from Japan, Supreme Court judges and Diet members among them, and a vast press contingent that will include 450 journalists from over 70 countries, plus nearly 150 Japanese reporters. Guests at the accession ceremony get to see the Emperor and his wife, Empress Misako, in imperial garb as he announces his official enthronement. The ceremony is the most important of several to mark an accession that began on the 1st of May. Next month we'll see the Daijusai, a Shinto rice offering ceremony, and there will also be a number of shrine visits. All this for the quite hefty sum of 16 billion yen, or $150 million. Enthronements, it seems, don't come cheap.
The family-run department store chain Nordstrom is bucking trends. While Barney's and JCPenney are showing signs of decline, Nordstrom will, this week, unveil a new flagship store in New York. Dana Thomas is the author of several books on the luxury and fashion industries, most recently Fashionopolis, The Price of Fast Fashion and the Future of Clothes. Dana, tell us, why is Nordstrom succeeding in a field where so many others seem to be finding only trouble?
Well, it's interesting. What I learned when I was working on my book, which I hadn't contemplated, is that Nordstrom is a Seattle-based company. And so when it came time to modernize the company, to be really digital, really on point with the new sort of consumer, they had a great base from which to pull folks from Amazon, their neighbor. So they've taken a lot of digital experts, tech experts, and retail experts from Amazon and helped to put together their modernization and their way forward in a way that nobody else has.
Do you think this proves then that, contrary to what's often been the popular consensus, bricks and mortar retail really isn't disappearing, and that when done well, customers are still hungering for a good physical shopping experience?
Absolutely. There's sort of two kinds of models right now, what I call the former Vegas and the current Vegas. The former Vegas is, you know, destination and, you know, sort of novelty. Remember when Vegas had like roller coasters and became a family resort? Well, that's what sort of the Hudson Yards model is, that we're going to bring you here to see all these interesting things and you can shop too. The modern Vegas is that you're going to come here and have a really great time, but it's, you know, sort of an adult experience, and we're going to offer you all sorts of different things that are about service and about experience that are sort of more pampering. And that's what Nordstrom is doing. That's the model they're following. So they're doing things like they have in-house personal stylists for anyone, not just the VIPs. And they have one third of their market is still online, but you can do pickup 24/7, and you can have delivery in New York City within 3 hours. They want to draw people in who are walking down 57th Street. They think of it as the local store for Midtown Manhattan, which is kind of cool, and as opposed to a destination like Hudson Yards. And at the same time, they're offering lots of interesting and appealing services.
Dana Thomas, always a pleasure to speak to you. Thanks for joining us.
I read in the newspapers speculation that the pound could go to parity with the dollar if we were to crash out of the European Union. And this is not Project Fear. This is what's actually happening in the economy today, and every independent report.
Anyone who's caught even a few minutes of the nightly Brexit news coverage here in Britain has probably heard the xylophone man. For our international listeners, this gentleman seems to spend most of his evenings playing tunes on a xylophone outside the Houses of Parliament, within just a few metres of the areas reserved for journalists, often treating viewers of the major networks to an array of tunes played all the way through the evening news. The ongoing Brexit saga has certainly given light to some, well, shall we say, interesting methods of political protest. Monocle's affairs editor Chris Chermak takes out his tuning fork for a closer look.
Over the weekend, my father, who's Austrian, messaged to ask if I was joining the hundreds of thousands standing in front of the UK's Parliament for the big march in favour of a second referendum on Brexit. I wasn't there, but this weekend the subject of protests has been on my mind and on show. From London to Lebanon and Chile to Hong Kong, people of all political stripes have massed to be heard. But can such meetings add up to meaningful change? In a word, yes. Just look at Lebanon. Not only are demonstrations forcing the government to pass economic reforms and reverse a rather bizarre proposal to tax WhatsApp messages, but it has brought the country's various religious groups together in a common anti-corruption cause. Success might be less obvious in London or even Hong Kong, but it's there if you look. In the UK, It may be too late to reverse Brexit, but it could nudge London to maintain closer ties with the EU down the line and remind Parliament of its wafer-thin mandate to decide this most permanent and far-reaching of rulings. I've attended plenty of protests over the years. My favorite has to be the 2010 rally to restore sanity and or fear in Washington. I invite you to Google it. I've always gone as an unbiased reporter rather than an active participant, but that shouldn't stop all of you from showing your colors. If Lebanon shows us anything, it's that fighting, albeit peacefully, is worthwhile, even if there's only an outside chance of change.
Our ever-polite affairs editor, Chris Chermak, there, making himself heard. That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Ryland. The Monocle Minute returns on Wednesday.